to west. The mountain will be moved north and south, and there will be a ravine there. And it tells us down, verse number 10, and tells us the landmass is going to be affected by this, from Geba in the north to Rimmon south of Jerusalem. Now we're getting ahead of ourselves. The fracture in the mount, the ravine, and then the refuge, that crevice that he makes there is a place for the inhabitants of Jerusalem to flee into when the Lord comes back and that atomic bomb goes off, so to speak. And God and the Lord annihilates all those people. Again, verse 12. This shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite all the people that have fought against Jerusalem. Their flesh shall consume away while they stand in their feet. Their eyes shall consume away in their holes, and their tongue shall consume away in their mouth. When the Lord comes back and that event takes place, the people of Jerusalem will have that ravine to flee into when that mount is cleaved. They'll go into that place for refuge. So that's what we talked about under the fracture. Letter B was the faintness in the light. We saw that in verse 6 and 7. It shall come to pass in that day, the light shall be not clear nor dark, but it shall be one day which shall be known to the Lord, not day nor night, but it shall come to pass that at evening time it shall be light. Look at Acts chapter 2, and I just want to give you this. We talked about this last week, but look at Acts chapter 2 and verse number 20. Here's Peter preaching in the day of Pentecost. And in verse 19, Peter says, I will show what says the Lord says. I will show wonders in the heaven above, signs in the earth beneath, blood and fire and vapor of smoke. And the sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before that great and notable day of the Lord come. That great and notable day is what we're reading about in Zechariah 14. And he says that when that happens, the moon shall be turned to blood. Aren't you glad the blood moons are over? Hallelujah. If you've been listening to John Hagee, you've been listening to all that stuff, thank God it's over. Now they can shut up. That sounds pretty harsh, but folks, we as Christians are very gullible. Do you know that? We're very gullible, and we buy into the next fad and the next trend and buy the next book that's talking about biblical prophecy. And the problem is we do that without reading the Bible. And so folks go out and buy this book about blood moons. Can I tell you that those blood moons had nothing to do with Acts chapter 2, verse 20? We talked about that a couple of weeks ago. That is a moon that turns to blood, not a blood moon. Not this eclipse where the light from the sun is going through the earth's atmosphere and hitting the moon and looking at making it look red. That's all scientific astronomy, and that's all fine. That's not Bible. That's not the blood moon that this is. In fact, this is never called a blood moon. This is a moon turning to blood. I mean, it vaporizes, basically. It ceases to exist. Not the stuff that sells books that's going on right there. So personally, I'm glad all this talk about this, I hope it's over. Now that the last blood moon, so to speak, has passed, and it's all done now, we can stop having to hear about this stuff. We can get back to the Bible. You know how I know the blood moon didn't happen? Because we're not in the tribulation. Now, I know gas prices jumped up the other day quite a bit, up to $2.49 a gallon, so some folks think we're in the tribulation now. But that's not the tribulation. So all that stuff, thankfully, is all over, but that is going to happen in the future. The Lord's going to come back. His foot's going to hit that mountain. It's going to cleave. The moon's going to be turned to blood. The stars from heaven are going to fall. There's going to be great things that happen on earth and in heaven. That's the faintness of the light. All right, now we get to C and D. And as I was going over this week, we got to go to D before we get to C. I guess I should have, when I made my outline, I should have switched these around. But let's jump down to D before we go up to C. Now, we've got them in that order because the verse about C is in verse 8 and the verse about letter D is in verse 10. But I want to jump down to verse 10 first. And this is letter D on the outline. All the land shall be turned as a plain from Geba to Rimmon south of Jerusalem. And it, Jerusalem, shall be lifted up and inhabited in her place, from Benjamin's gate to the place of the first gate, to the corner of the gate, from the tower of Hananeel unto the king's wine presses. Brother Griffiths would say, this stuff is too cool for Sunday school. And it is. This stuff is amazing. Don't buy those other books. Buy this one. Because this has got enough information in it that is just amazing. And here the Bible tells us in verse 10, this is letter D, the forming of the land. The forming of the land. There's going to be a change that takes place in the land of Israel. And this is going to be the epicenter of the change that takes place. The Lord's going to come back, as we've already seen. His toe is going to touch the top of that mountain. It's going to cleave. The Mount of Olives is going to cleave. There's going to be a valley that goes east to west. Now we're going to look at the size of that valley. The Bible calls it now a plain. Not just like a ravine or what we've had, but it's going to be not even a valley, but a plain. As this thing gets bigger, it's going to expand when the Lord comes back. And it's going to go from, verse 10, from Geba in the south to Rimmon south of in the north to Rimmon south of Jerusalem. Keep your place there and look at Isaiah chapter 40. Isaiah chapter 40. This book we've got in our hands is just absolutely amazing. And until we really dig into it and look at it, we don't realize that. Isaiah chapter 40, look at verse 3. The voice of him that crieth in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord, make straight in the desert a highway for our God. You know what that was? That was the message of who? John the Baptist when he came. John the Baptist was preaching Isaiah 40, verse 3. Why? Well, because we've learned on Sunday nights, if the Jews would have accepted Christ as their Messiah, the kingdom of God would have come to earth right then. The kingdom of heaven would have been established right then. So John the Baptist, if you were, is Elijah at the end of the book of Malachi that was promised to come. All the prophecies of God would have been completed if Israel would have received their Messiah the first time. But they didn't. They rejected him. But John the Baptist was a fulfillment of that verse, pronouncing that the Lord, that's why the Lord came, to make the valleys straight, to make the mountains level. All right, look at verse 4. Every valley shall be exalted. Every mountain and hill should be made low. Now, John the Baptist was preaching that. Did that happen when John the Baptist preached? Did that happen when the Lord came to us? No, because the nation of Israel rejected him. So this verse automatically went 2,000 years into the future when the Jews rejected him. But the Bible had it covered either way. If they had accepted him the first time, this would have all happened then. But they rejected him, so now it got put off for 2,000, but it's still going to happen. Verse 4, every valley shall be exalted, every mountain and hill shall be made low, and the crooked shall be made straight, and the rough places plain. And the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all flesh shall see it together, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken it. That is a time yet to come. We're reading about in Zechariah 14, it's in Ezekiel 37, we'll look in a minute, 37, 47. And this is a time where the Lord comes back, and that mountain is it's cleaved, north to south. Geba in the north to Rimmon in the south. I had to Google that. And I find that that's 41 miles, if those numbers are correct. 41 miles from that city in verse number 10 of Zechariah 14 that's in the north to that city. So that means that mountain, when it's cleaved north to south, it's going to be cleaved 41 miles. That valley is going to be 41 miles going north to south. Then that valley also goes, notice verse 8. The second, half of them toward the former sea, and half of them toward the hinder sea. Now, without going a lot of the former sea is the Dead Sea. The hinder sea is the Mediterranean Sea. I wish we had a map up here. We could put a map of Israel up there. And you can see Jerusalem kind of in the middle, and to the west is the Mediterranean. 37 miles to the west is the Mediterranean. 21 miles to the east is the Dead Sea. And this plain is going to be 41 miles going north to south, and from the Mediterranean to the Dead Sea is all going to be one plain. And that's about 50 miles, 50-some miles going east to west, 41 going north. It's all going to be completely leveled. The Mount of Olives is going to be brought low. Now, think about that land. You know the Dead Sea, and I wish I didn't compute this, one of you mathematicians. The Dead Sea is 400 meters below sea level. That's why, you know, all that salt is in there. It's got no way to get out of the Dead Sea. It's 400, Daryl? 1,300, what's that in miles, do you know, by any chance? Okay. That didn't sound very high, okay. I don't care about meters either, I'm with it. That's all European nonsense, okay. But it's that one below sea level. God's going to level the whole thing. From the Mediterranean to the Dead Sea, from Geba to Rimmon, God's going to level that whole plain all at one time. Now you're talking about the Mount of Olives is 2,500 feet high. You're talking about a drop from the Mediterranean to the Dead Sea that's 1,300 feet, whatever, there. All right, 400 meters going down. And the Lord's going to bring that thing all up level and flat when he comes back and cleaves that mountain. That mountain will move. Somebody says, well, it's just an earthquake. No, an earthquake doesn't do that. Now, it'll appear like an earthquake to the inhabitants of the earth, but it's going to move the mountain and level the land all at one time. You know how much the Jew would like to do that right now? You know how much the nation of Israel would love that to be a plain right now instead of all the headaches and all that elevation and all that does for them? And when the Lord comes back, number one, under the forming of that is the leveling of the country. The leveling of the country. That whole area, 40 miles north to south, 50 miles east to west. Maybe it's only 40 east to west, 4x4. That city built 4 square, I don't know. But it's going to be a big plain. It's all going to be leveled for the millennial kingdom of Christ. I just think that's amazing. I think that Him touching that mountain and just instantaneously, that whole area that's all rugged and terrain like that is all going to be leveled and made one beautiful plain. What for? Well, we'll see in just a minute. So there's the leveling of the country. Number two. Look at verse number 10 again. And Jerusalem shall be lifted up. All right, in verse number 10. South of Jerusalem, and it, Jerusalem, shall be lifted up. So what's going to happen? All the plain is going to be leveled, and then Jerusalem, which is basically in the middle, 40 miles to one way, 50 to the other, basically in the middle, it's going to be elevated. Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem, is going to be lifted up so that wherever you're at, anywhere in that plain, you're going to be able to see the city of Jerusalem lifted up, elevated, right there in the middle of it. Why? Christ is sitting on the throne of David. It becomes the capital of the millennial kingdom. Everything goes in and out of Jerusalem. And in anywhere in that plain that these people are living, they're going to, you know, a clear day, I don't know how far you can see, but you're going to be able to see, you're going to be able to see that city is going to be the center of human government during the millennial reign of Christ. And that whole plain around it, everything is going to focus on Jerusalem. There's going to be the lifting up of that city as Christ establishes His throne. Keep your place. Look back at Isaiah 2. This is the thing. When you're reading these prophets of the Old Testament, again, they're never talking about the rapture. They're never talking away of the catching away of the church. They're talking about this second coming of Christ because that's what they were hoping. They weren't looking at it as the second coming. They were looking at it as the first coming because they knew when He came, they were going to receive and believe Him, but when He came, they rejected Him. But this is the event they're talking about, and it could have happened when He came the first time if they would have received Him, but how history would have been changed. We've been grafted in, Gentiles, according to Paul, because of the Jews' rejection of Christ the first time. I don't know about you, but I'm kind of happy about that. I mean, I'm sorry for the Jews, but I'm kind of, as a Gentile, I'm kind of, as a believer, I'm kind of happy about that. We got what we got because they rejected Him. Now, that's a sad scenario. But look at Isaiah chapter 2 and verse 2. And it shall come to pass in the last days, this is that time we're talking about, Zechariah 14, that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established in the top of the mountains. All right, all the other mountains are leveled. Jerusalem will be sitting on top of a high mountain and shall be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow into it. Verse 3, and many people shall go and say, come and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. And He will teach us His ways, and we will walk in His paths. For out of Zion, that's Jerusalem, shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And He shall judge among the nations and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares. How many people have you seen try to use that verse and apply it to today? You know, you go to these peace movements and all that, and they're quoting this verse. It has nothing to do with today. This is when the Lord comes back that will happen. It's not going to happen while man is in control of the world. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. That's all going to happen when the Lord comes back and levels the playing field and elevates the city of Jerusalem and all the nations. It is the center of the earth and the center of the world. And Christ is sitting on the throne. That's what happens with the forming of the land. Now let's jump back up to letter C. And here's, can you tell I get excited about this? I don't know. I try to contain myself. But when the Lord comes back, all this is going to happen. The plain's going to be leveled 40 miles by 40 or 50 miles. Jerusalem's going to be elevated. Christ's going to be sitting on the throne. The temple of God, the house of God, is going to be in the center of Jerusalem, and all the nations of the earth are going to worship toward it. And everything will flow into it, and everything will flow out of it. Letter C is the flowing of the water. The flowing of the water. Yes? Lifting. The lifting of the city. Yes, thank you. All right, the flowing of the water. Zechariah 14, verse 8. And it shall be in that day that living waters shall go out from Jerusalem. Or does that term living water sound familiar? Christ told the woman at the well, if you ask for me, I will give you living water. In the millennium, Christ in Jerusalem is going to give to the world living water, healing waters, we'll see in just a moment. Living water is going to flow out of Jerusalem. It shall go out from Jerusalem. Half of the waters toward the former sea, the Dead Sea, half of them toward the Hinder Sea, the Mediterranean. In summer and in winter, year-round, shall it be. The plain leveled. Jerusalem lifted up. The house of God sitting in the middle. Water flowing out of it to the east and to the west. From an elevated flowing downhill. Watering the whole plain, all the way to the Dead Sea, all the way to the Mediterranean. You know what's interesting about this? This is great. In 1855, a fellow named William Allen came up with an idea to build a canal from the Mediterranean to the Dead Sea. 1855. Now, I don't know if this guy was a believer. I don't know if he's a Christian. I don't know if he read his Bible. I don't know how he did it. But he wanted to do what the Lord's going to do. He wanted to build a canal that would go from the Mediterranean through Jerusalem over to the Red Sea to water all that plain and to get water in and out of the Dead Sea because it's 400 meters below sea level. And the water gets there and stagnates and it's no good. It's good for nothing. And so he wanted a plan that would get water from the Mediterranean over there and in the process water all the plains that were there in 1855. And this plan, and I forgot the letters for it, but this plan has been talked about since that time at different occasions, trying to build a waterway from the Mediterranean to the Dead Sea. And isn't that amazing that in Zechariah 14 and verse 8, the Bible tells us when the Lord comes back, He's going to build a waterway from the Mediterranean to the Dead Sea that flows through Jerusalem. Notice number one. Wait, before we go there, look at Psalm 46. Again, Old Testament passages that refer to this event. Psalm 46. Psalm 46 and verse 1. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore will we not fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled. Can you get the context right now and see what David's writing about prophetically? And the mountains shake with the swelling thereof, Selah. There is a river. I like that old song. There is a river. There is a river. The streams whereof shall make glad the city of God and the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. A river that flows from Jerusalem to the west of the Mediterranean, to the east, to the Dead Sea, because all the plain has been leveled. You know, William Allen, when he talked about that, I was reading the statistics and how big a diameter of pipe was going to go from this place to that and this place to that and where they're going to put the pumps. Because obviously, if you've got 400 meters elevation that you're dropping from Jerusalem to the Dead Sea, you're going to have to be pumping water somewhere. And that's what made it not feasible for them to be able to do. There were too many things. The Mount of Olives is in the way. And all these other things, all these natural obstacles. Well, when the Lord comes back, He removes the natural obstacles. He levels the whole field. He lifts Jerusalem up, and the waters come out of the throne of God and goes east and west, and it's all taken care of. And so we find, number one, under the flowing of the water, the portal. P-O-R-T-A-L, the portal. Where the water is coming from. Here in verse number 8 of Zechariah 14, it says, the living water shall go out from Jerusalem. From Jerusalem. Look at Revelation 22, verse 1. Revelation 22, verse 1. And he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding out of the throne of God and of the Lamb. All right, that's that millennial city during the millennium. That's that city of Jerusalem and the throne of God as Jesus is sitting there. Out of it is going to flow living water, flowing in both directions. It'll come from Jerusalem. It'll come from under the temple. If you don't want, Ezekiel 47:1 is the verse. If you want to write it down, I'll read it. Ezekiel 47:1, afterward he brought me again to the door of the house, and behold, waters issued out from under the threshold of the house eastward. For the forefront of the house stood toward the east, and the waters came out down from under the right side of the house and the south side of the altar. Ezekiel, in chapter 47, we're going to see in a minute, saw a vision of this throne of God in the millennial kingdom and the water flowing out from under the temple of God and going eastward and westward and watering all the plain during the millennial reign of Christ. So the portal, the foundation, the source is from the temple in the city of Jerusalem. Number two in our outline. The portal, number one. Number two, the places. And we've talked about this already, really. The places. In verse number 8, half of them toward the former sea and half of them toward the hinder sea. So that thing that man could not figure out how to do to get water from the Mediterranean to the Dead Sea. How do we get it that 90 miles across or that 50 miles across? How do we get it across there with the elevation problems and the mountain in the way and the leveling? How are we going to do that with pumps and diameter of pipes and all that kind of stuff? Man, has, since 1855, has not been able to figure out a way to do it with all of our technology today. And yet the Lord, in one instant, when His foot touches the top of that mountain, all this is going to happen right then at one time. You understand why the Jews are going to believe in their Messiah when He comes the second time? You understand why they didn't believe the first time when He came born of a virgin in a manger? That's not what they were looking for. Now, that's not to excuse them, you understand, but that's not what they were looking for. But when He comes the second time and all this stuff happens, Revelation 1 tells us, every eye shall see Him and every tongue shall moan because of Him, and they that pierced Him, all right, will moan, because they'll realize, the nation of Israel will realize, that's our Messiah. He finally comes down and He does all this stuff and they're saying, see, Gentiles, see, nations of the world, we knew our Messiah would come. Then they see Him and He's got nail prints in His hands and feet. And they moan because of Him. They realize He came the first time. But I think we can understand why many of them rejected Him the first time. This is what they were looking for. Not a guy riding on the back of a donkey into Jerusalem with people waving palm leaves. They were looking for somebody that came down with this kind of power to deliver them from Roman bondage. And so they didn't accept Him the first time, but they will the second time. Number three in our outline, the permanency. The permanency. Not only will the waters flow out of Jerusalem east and west, but it says in verse number 8, in the summer and in the winter shall it be. All right, the waters are not going to freeze up in the winter. They're not going to dry up in the summer. There'll be no drought. There'll be no ice fishing. All right, this water is going to be a continuous water flowing from the throne of God. You know, moving water has a hard time freezing. But this water is going to be flowing out from the throne of God. In summer and in winter shall it be. It's not seasonal. And notice this also. Oh, I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll do this in just a minute. All right, that's the permanency. In summer and in winter, year round, this water will never dry up. Well, it will never go down. You know, I live 1,700 feet from Wills Creek. I know that because of our water line and all this kind of stuff. But I live 1,700 feet from Wills Creek. And I like to go back there sometimes, tromp through the woods back there and just go look. And sometimes the water is really high. Sometimes the water is really low. There's a difference in the elevation. But in this one, it's going to be a constant flow of the river from winter to summer, year-round, season-round. It's all going to be the same because it's sustained by God. Only God can do something that's going to be consistent. Anything man does is going to fluctuate and really going to deteriorate. If you own a car, you know that. If you own a house, you know that. Anything man-made is going to deteriorate. But God's going to make something that just continues to exist and exist. For a thousand years, this will be exactly like this without any problems. Summer and winter season won't bother it. None of that kind of stuff. It's going to be a permanent flowing of water out of Jerusalem, going east and west over that plain from the Mediterranean to the Dead Sea. Number four, the progression. And we're going to go to Ezekiel 47 now, because Ezekiel gives us, and we looked at verse 1, but notice the progression of the water. Can I say it this way? Some of you don't like deep water. You like the kids' wading pool. Well, go to Jerusalem. If you go to Jerusalem, the water's not that deep. The farther you get away from Jerusalem, the deeper the water's going to be. And that in itself is a miracle, because the only reason water can get deeper far away is by other tributaries that feed into it. The water down here, 30 miles away from its source, can't be any deeper than it is back here because it's constantly flowing. But usually creeks and streams can be deeper down here because there's other rivers or streaks or creeks or streams flowing into it. But this one is just coming out of the throne of Jerusalem. But notice what happened when the Lord told Ezekiel to measure the depth of the water coming out of that throne. Verse 2. Then brought he me out of the way of the gate northward, and led me about the way without unto the utter gate, by the way that looketh eastward. And behold, there ran out waters on the right side. Verse 3. And when the man that had a line in his hand went forth eastward, he measured 1,000 cubits. And he brought me through the waters, and the waters were to the ankles. All right, easy to understand, right? When he comes to Jerusalem, he goes 1,000 cubits, is it 1,000 cubits away, and he measures the water, and the water is to the ankles. Flowing out of Jerusalem from that elevation, flowing down, the water is to the ankles. Now, those of you that like wading pools, there's your place right there. In the millennium, you want to be as close to Jerusalem as you can. Now, it's not a flood that we don't have to worry about wading through water, but if you like to get in this stream, there's where it's the shallowest, right where it's coming out, it's to the ankles. Then look at verse 4. Again, he measured 1,000 and brought me through the waters, and the waters were to the knees. So as the water goes out from Jerusalem, it's getting deeper as it flows down into the plains and into the valleys to water that 40 by 50 mile plain that Jesus has leveled, and now is watering the whole thing by this stream that comes out. Verse 4, the middle of the verse, and he measured 1,000 and brought me through, and the waters were to the loins, up to his waist. So the water went from ankle deep, to knee deep, and now it's to waist deep. And verse 5, afterward, he measured 1,000, and it was a river that I could not pass over, for the waters were risen, waters to swim in. A river that could not be passed over. Waters to swim in. That's how deep the water gets as it goes out of the throne of God. What's the source of this water? It's the throne of God. You talk about crystal, pure water. How many of you would like to go down to Wills Creek, get a glass, dip it in there, and drink some of that water? How many places have you seen where you'd actually want to? We lived in the Micronesian Islands in a beautiful climate with a big mountain, and the rainfall would come up here and flow down to the villages around it, almost like this. And that water was crystal clear. But there's bacteria in that water. You didn't want to drink that water. I can testify to that. I did it on two different occasions over the 7 years there. Both times I ended up with dysentery. You had to boil that water to be able to drink that water. That was pure, clear, clean water. But not like this water. This water is going to come out of the throne of God, Revelation 22, pure, clear, like crystal, and water the whole plains of the valley. It's going to be life-giving water. Number 5, the purging. The purging of the waters. Ezekiel 47 and verse 8. Then he saith to me, these waters issue out toward the east country and go down to the desert and go to the sea, which being brought forth unto the sea, the waters shall be healed. This water is going to heal the waters of the Dead Sea. Again, if you know the Dead Sea, it's also called the Salt Sea. And nothing can survive, nothing can live in the Dead Sea because of the salt element in it. It's below sea level. Nothing can purify, but this water is going to flow down and purify even the Dead Sea. Even that is going to be, the waters of that sea are going to be healed. The purging of those waters. It says in verse 9, and it shall come to pass that everything that liveth, which moveth, whithersoever the river shall come, shall live. Not only are the waters going to heal, but they are healing waters. Remember Ponce de Leon looking for that fountain of youth in Florida? Well, he missed it by a few thousand miles and a few thousand years, because there is one coming. Everything that the water touches shall live, and there shall be a very great multitude of fish, because these waters shall come thither, for they shall be healed, and everything shall live, whether the river cometh. Healing waters during the millennium. Doctors will be out of business. Now, we can say hallelujah right there, because there's none of them among us right now, all right? Doctors, the waters are going to be for the healing of the nations. What a difference is going to be when the Lord comes back and these things come to pass. Then number 6, in the flowing of the water, the provisions. The provisions. The water is there to give health to all that are in the millennial kingdom. It's watering all the plain from east to west, flowing out of Jerusalem, healing the waters, and everything that drinks of it or touches it is healed. Then notice it says in verse 10 of Ezekiel 47, and it shall come to pass that the fishers shall stand upon it from Engedi even unto Eglium. They shall be a place to spread forth nets. Their fish shall be according to their kinds, as the fish of the great sea, exceeding many. They're fishing in this river, and it's got fish like the great sea. That means the fish in this thing are going to be catches you can talk to your kids about. And you don't have to, you know, fisherman stories. Oh, it was this big. It's going to be fish as the great sea. So this river is going to produce meat for food. The fish of the sea are going to be provided, the meals. Not only that, but look at verse 12. And the river upon the bank thereof, on this side and on that side, shall grow all trees for meat, whose leaf shall not fade, neither shall the fruit thereof be consumed. It shall bring forth new fruit according to his months. Because their waters, they issued out of the sanctuary, and the fruit thereof shall be for meat. So you're going to have a meat and fruit diet in the millennial kingdom. Now again, if you're part of the church, which you are if you're saved, you're raptured out. This doesn't really apply to you. This applies to the earthly inhabitants of the millennium. And they're going to have fish for food, and all the fruits of the trees, different seasons, the trees bringing forth different fruits. We read about that also in Revelation 22. And all this is going to be provided by the Lord during the millennial kingdom. It's the Garden of Eden all over again. Adam doesn't have to go out and work by the sweat of his brow. He doesn't have to labor with his hands. It's all going to be provided by God, just like it was originally. Then look at the end of verse 12. And the leaf thereof for medicine. So meat and medicine. The two things you need to live long, meat and medicine. And it's going to be the leaves of the trees. You know, that's not hard, that hard a concept. Again, living out in the Micronesian Islands, there were a lot of those leaves out there that the people had figured out that those leaves had healing properties. And there are times with different sicknesses, they could take those leaves and make a bath out of them and apply the water to people. Now, they went overboard. One time they were treating a woman with a cracked or a broken rib with banana leaves, thinking that would do it, and that wasn't going to do that. But there are healing powers in some of those. Some folks are trying to convince us today that marijuana has healing properties in its leaves. In that day, the leaves thereof shall be for medicine. The two things we need to sustain a long life, food and medical health to keep our bodies going. Both of them provided by the water that flows out of the throne of God from Jerusalem that's been lifted up, and the temple of God that has water coming from its foundation that goes east and west and is healing for all the nations. That's going to happen when the Lord comes back the second time. Again, that's what the Jews were looking for when John the Baptist said, here he is. Here's our Christ. They were looking for that sign, not the babe born in a manger. So it's easy, again, to point an accusing finger to the Jews and say, you should have believed. But knowing that, we can understand, not excuse, but understand, Christ didn't come the way they were looking for Him. And they weren't humble enough to accept Him the way they came. But when He comes the next time, with signs and wonders, they're going to believe. This will be the creation that's affected at His second coming. Let's bow our heads in prayer. Father, again, we thank You for Your Word. How amazing, how rich, what a gold.